Mic on? Yes. Welcome everyone to Mix. I hope you're excited to be here as myself in the last session of the day. Promise I get you to gambling as quickly as I can. And my name is Markus Mielke. I'm a program manager at Microsoft working for IE. And I joined Microsoft in 99 and pretty much worked on web technologies ever since. And today I'm actually here in my other role because I'm also a member of the CSS working group working on standards on behalf of Microsoft. So I joined the CSS working group in 2005, and back then it was all about getting CSS 2.1 out of the door, getting browsers to adopt it, kind of like moving the world towards CSS 2.1. So now fast forwarding to 2011, CSS 2.1 is mainstream. And thank God, I think I saw the Twitter feed today, it's like so close to becoming a recommendation. I think they closed down the last little things. So CSS 2.1 is now finally behind us. So which gives the working group a breather to actually look ahead and say, like, what are the next things web developers really need to build their applications? And that's what I'm here to talk about to you guys. I will introduce three very exciting specs to you. The first one is CSS3 Grid. Second, CSS3 Flexbox. And third, seriously, multi-column, and how it can help you to build adaptive experiences on the web. So first of all, I'd like to see how many of you are actually web designers. A couple hands. How many of you work on front ends, like working customer experiences? How many of you actually had to build experiences with scale across multiple devices, mobile versus desktop? Okay, how many of you who have to build this actually found it difficult? Yeah, pretty much everyone. So I'm here to give you some tools at hand and show you what the standards do to try to help you, and as well as what Internet Explorer is doing to help you in that regard. So here's the problem. We are faced with building experiences across all these different screen sizes. The mobile market, especially on the web, is exploding. A lot of more experiences want to be built on the mobile devices. And we're so used to building desktop experiences that we kind of forget that all these new tablet devices are now coming on the market. Of course, with their own specific screen resolutions, with their own DPIs. So now building experiences which can target all these become a little bit of a challenge. But if you think small, we shouldn't forget big as well. I wish I had that set up in my office at home, but sadly I don't. But it should make us think a little bit about, it's not just about the small devices, it's also about scaling up. If you want to build an application that scales well on a TV experience, you probably want to target that a little different than if you just want to run on a mobile device, for example. So building fluid or adaptive experiences should actually be a no-brainer on the web. Because back in 1995, the web was fully fluid. And why was it fully fluid? Because it only consisted of text and images. And text, with the capabilities of floaters, were nicely wrapping around independent of what screen size you had. But of course, that wasn't enough. Because we as, designers and web developers, we wanted more control. So what did we do? Well, we looked at a feature called HTML tables, which was originally targeted for tabular data, and we took that to build some really creative layouts because it kind of helped us actually to align our content. And tables were actually fluid in nature as well because you could give them percentages, you could give them star units. It was kind of a nice tool to work with the exception that it's really, really bad. It's bad for two reasons. A, it lived in the markup, so it completely polluted your markup tree. If you wanted to build a different experience for a different device, you pretty much had to go and manipulate the whole DOM to rearrange all these elements so they can render differently. And secondly, it also had an accessibility concern because it was living in the markup. All your content was polluted with the TRs, TDs, and all these little injected tags. So for screen reader, it was very hard to actually figure out what content were there. And I'm not even talking about performance here. So today, I want to take a little step back and look like, what is missing? What kind of tools do we have today to work around it, not using tables? Well, the answer is, as I mentioned before, what the working group work very hard on is CSS 2.1. That's a tool we have available today to do that. And pretty much that came back to where the web was in 1995, which is text and floaters. But web designers, they come up with these really creative designs to kind of work around the problem. So with the clearance property, they were able to build, well, fluid, rich designs, like three columns, as we can all see and find on the web today. But they have a little problem. Because if I take a look at the code structure here, and I'm using the IE developer tool, so there is this little magic thing called clear footer down here, and there's this little clear property here, and if I take this out, and I kind of start resizing my page, this is going to happen. So as you can see here, my layout completely broke. So if you operate with floaters in clearance, you have to be super careful not to accidentally break your layouts. So it became like an Einstein task to kind of like build really creative pages which have nested things and nested components to keep track of all these things. Well, what do we do as web designers? Well, we treated the web as print design. We opened up our Photoshop. We set an arbitrary width. Today it's 960 pixels, and that's where we went into town with. The problem with that is we get experiences like that, which on my big screen, nice widescreen at home, look really suboptimal. I have a lot of letterboxing going on, and it's not the ideal experience. Alternatively, I get the, I call it the upper left corner experience, where you have all your content clustered in the upper left hand side of the corner, and you have a lot of empty space floating around it. And of course, if you build a fixed-sized, content-sized page, it's not ideal for these little tiny devices. Yes, we have solved it with pinch zoom and all this stuff, but it would be much more ideal to an end user if you actually have an experience which just works right out of the gate. So today, I want to offer you guys a little bit alternative approach of thinking. Who of you had a chance to visit Robert Ingebrigtsen's talk before me? Were any one of you see that talk? Because he talked a lot about topography and layouts and how fluidity works in that concept. And he talked about, he talked about proportions rather than pixels. And he specifically introduced the audience to the golden rule, where you kind of like have certain sets of proportions of your page rather than pixel contents. And that's the way of thinking we need to have if we want to deal with fluid or adaptive designs. And another problem with this is, or not really a problem, it forces us to think a little bit differently. We cannot just put adaptive behavior at the end of a page, an already existing fixed page. It's very difficult to do. Because you need to start thinking of what areas can actually get additional space if it's available. And where do you make compromises if space gets condensed? So let me walk you through that in a little bit. So first, as I mentioned, fluid means to think of percentages rather than pixels and think in an available space. Like how much screen is built, how much of this blackness, how much of this letterboxing do you have available and you want to bring into your application. The next thing is start thinking of adaptive zones. So, for example, today if you do your layouts, you think of a header, a subcontent, a content area, a footer. So which of these zones can actually be adaptive in your layouts, or which one should be fixed, because there's always some content which you want to keep fixed. And of course, you can only be as adaptive as your content is. If you have a really big fixed-sized image on your page, there's nothing you can do. I mean, you cannot go any smaller than that. And even if you go larger, there's not much to do with that space. So think if you can chuck up your content in smaller pieces and think of how these can reorder themselves based on your screen real estate. And then last but not least, think of device families. Because you want to create different experiences for the phone versus a desktop, potentially for a slate versus to a TV experiences. So once you can identify your device families, you can create experiences which are somewhat fluid within that device family. And here's a very simple example to, just to kind of make that point. So what I have here is like a three-column fixed layout, and I've embedded a fixed-size image. And when I talk about available space, I'm talking about that white space here to the side. And of course, if you build the application, you should start thinking, where do I put that white space? Does it go in column one? Does it go in column two? Or does it go here? And reversely, start thinking of, if I start shrinking this, when do I start clipping my content? So in this case, I clip it here because this image it has an intrinsic size and cannot get any smaller. It's just to illustrate the points. So today I want to offer you an approach to think about the to the problem, like a simple cookbook you can use by building or designing your applications. The first thing at the high level is start thinking of what device families you want to target with your application. Then start thinking of how do you want to manage your real estate, like what is your headers, footers, subcontent, subnav areas. How many zones or regions do you have in your applications? And then, once you've figured out which of these zones can be adaptive or which of these zones can be fixed, use adaptive components inside those so they can actually transfer that available viz into some meaningful, useful content. And I'll show you what I mean by that in a second. So, Marcus, you just told us we only have available CSS 2.1. How are we going to build these? How do I manage my real estate? How do I manage my device families? Well, luckily, drum roll, the WCC and CSS is here for the rescue. Because they've already started thinking about the problem space ahead, and they're offering now specs, which we're working with all the other browser vendors to implement, to provide and offer you suggestions to the problem, give you the right tools at hand. So to manage your device families, the WCC and CSS offer CSS media queries. There's a very interesting talk tomorrow from 2 to 2:30. It's called The View of the World, HTML9, which I can highly recommend you guys attend. The next spec the WCC just recently put out is called CSS Grid, and it allows you to manage your real estate of your applications. And then lastly, there's two specs which help you actually manage fluidity within a certain region within your application, which is CSS Reflexbox and CSS Multicol. And as you've heard this morning when Dean was giving his keynote, we also announced Internet Explorer 10, the platform preview. And the good news about that is that these tools I just mentioned are now here today for you to learn, experiment, and give us feedback so we can drive the standards forward and get more browser vendors on board so we all can use these capabilities. So for managing device families, we have CSS3 media queries, and it's already implemented in IE9, and it's used pretty much by every other browser, so I highly recommend you to start using it today. It's a very powerful feature. I'm specifically proud about the CSS3 grid layout spec, because not just because I'm an author, of it, but also because today is the world premiere of the first browser to actually implementing this spec and give you these capabilities. Then we have CSS Flexbox, also part of the platform preview, and multi-column is also part of the platform preview. So let me drill a little bit into CSS media query and how you can use it. So going back to my little cookbook on how to manage device families, the first question you should ask yourself, how much do my layout change based on what device I'm on? So you might start thinking of, what do I want to do? What parts of my layout do I want to reoriented if I want portrait versus landscape? What if I go on mobile? What if I go on like a TV experience? And once you kind of like have mapped that out in your head, then CSS3 media queries is the right tool to help you do that. Because it allows you to target a certain device family and then apply a specific style sheet to that family where you can now turn on and off or move certain contents around. And here's a very simple example. So here, based on my screen resolution, I'm triggering media queries, and I'm providing a simple transform on a div box. And it's achieved very simply by a couple lines of CSS. So I say add media screen and giving a certain vis, and then by the higher the vis goes, the more I adjust the transforms. Very easy code to write. And very powerful and help you to adjust to the right device. So another important point of media query is it actually provides a mini language for you. So it's not just tells you, oh, am I portrait or am I landscape. It can actually say, oh, I'm in landscape, and I'm in the falling width, and I'm in the falling DPI. So you can really use it to target whatever device you want to target for your experiences. And here's like a couple examples how you can combine it with screen and certain width ranges to kind of like dial in to certain devices. So next, I want to talk about CSS3 Grid. So from our cookbook, now we have CSS Media Query to help us manage our device families. Now we need a tool to help us manage our real estate of our applications. And CSS Grid is that tool to do that, because it allows us to align our content and create regions within our application. The grid concept is not very young. I mean, it's been around for a long, long time. Who here in the audience still remembers like frames? Like when there was frame-based application, which probably was the first concept of helping you lay out your content and signing certain sections in these little frame boxes. Then in 2004, the advanced template layout spec got created, but it never got adopted by any of the browser vendors. 2007, the grid position spec arrived, which was like a topography grid proposal. And out of all these lessons which could be learned, Microsoft, in conjunction with the working group, came up with a new proposal in 2010, which is the grid layout proposal. And it is still hot off the press, so we have implemented it under the experimental -ms prefix. So your feedback is highly, highly appreciated to help us actually build a very robust spec which serves the need of your applications. And the grid pretty much solves the problem of aligning contents in row and columns. So here's just a couple, when we published that spec, a couple of quotes from Twitter folks. And the only two things I want to highlight is, what's nice about the W3C grid proposal is that it will not solve not only fixed width and float issues, but also responsive layout. And that's a takeaway I want you to walk away with, because it's a great tool to kind of help you build adaptive experiences. And of course, it also helps, if I could see it in a lifetime, it's kind of a preview, we thank God have that. So Hakon, you don't have to wait forever. So the point I want to stress is CSS Grid is a layout tool. It's not HTML tables. It is a pure CSS construct. So it does not pollute your markup in any way or form. It also helps you to build adaptive applications by introducing the notion of a fractional unit. So a fractional unit means is like that little white space I showed you by my three-column layout. To distribute that across you can take that space and distribute it wherever you want in your other zones. And the FR unit helps you to define proportions, like if it's an FR, one FR means take everything, two FR means like take twice as much as another FR unit would take. It also allows you to span, so you can create your regions like the header, main, footer sections. The grid is source independent, so you can combine it greatly with media queries. So you can say, hey, landscape, I want to use the following layout. For portrait, I want to use the following layout with the same content, and you just with CSS, you just move things around. And I'll show you in a second how that works. And it provides you alignments within cells, across cells. And it has a concept of layering. If you're familiar with a WPF grid, there are some concepts here which should sound you familiar. And we're bringing that power now to the web, which is really exciting. And you can now build very powerful, flexible applications with those capabilities. So now let's take a look at that game example. And let's start building that up. So what I want to do in the game example, I pretty much want to align my little header section with my main content area. Underneath, I want to stack like a high score list. And I want to size it to the largest, highest high score I have in there. And at the bottom, I have just like some stats and like a control area. And the game board and the control area, I want to make fluid. So how am I going to do that? So well, first, I start off with my content. So I'm just creating a certain set of divs and slot in my content for my page. Then I define the grid just by a display grid paradigm. And I'm setting up my columns. In the first column, I make sizing it to the content. The second column, I make fluid to how much available space I have left. And I create three rows. The first, again, size to content. The second, fluid. And the third, again, size to content. So now I have my grid established, and I have my content. The next step, I need to start slotting my content into my grid cells. And it's very easy. I'll just define grid columns or grid rows, and that's where the content goes. Or I can apply with the span property. I can now introduce spanning, and I can also align it within the cells. So it's very easy to do. The next point I want to stress is the source order independence. So with media query, I can now recreate different layouts without actually touching my main content. So as you see here, the stats area now moves from the side to the top in portrait mode. So how do I build that? Well, first, I start off with a simple media query where I define the landscape mode. And then I'm just using my grid placing mechanism to say, here's where the content goes. And if I want to go into portrait, I'm just defining a portrait media share, and I'm just changing around the slots. So as you can see, the stats area was before it in slot 1-2, and now the stats is in 2-1. So I just moved it up to the top corner. No JavaScript, just a few lines of CSS to give you that power. So the next thing I want to talk about is we also give you the capability to actually position content within grid cells. And that you do with the combination of layering and alignment. So if you wouldn't have the combination of that, you would pretty much have to figure out what is my top position of my cell and then use absolute position with top and left to kind of start placing stuff, which requires a lot of math for you to do. And alignment gives you an easy way to say, that content I want to kind of have at the bottom of my cell, I want to have at the top of my cell, I want at the center of my cell, left, right, wherever you want to place it, with just a couple properties, no math required, promise. And you can create like fully stacked experiences like here in combination. So let me give you a little grid demo. So what I have here is like a 2x2 grid where I started to build my application. And I want my application to kind of scale between landscape, portrait, because I'm kind of targeting a slate device, and mobile. So these are the three experiences I want to build. So first, I started laying out my things in the head in a 2x2 grid, where I have a logo, a menu, a subcontent, and a main content area. And then when I start getting to from landscape to portrait, you noticed how my subcontent area now out of a sudden moved to the bottom. And if I go even smaller, I'm just left with a subcontent area. That's kind of like how I want, my layout to adapt to. And it's just a single application, so I didn't have to write separate experience to do that. And how do I do it? Well, again, as I described before, I start with my content, which is somewhere down here. It's all my little divs. Then I define my grid, and I give it the 2x2 for the landscape experience. And then I start slotting my content into these grid cells. And then I'm using the media queries to create the portrait experience. And here I'm building my 3x2 grid and start slotting stuff against it again. And then lastly, my mobile experience for 320 pixels, which is kind of the norm on mobile devices. No line of JavaScript. All done declaratively in CSS. So what's the benefit of Grid for you? Well, it helps you to manage the real estate of your application in a very declarative and straightforward way. It is, as I mentioned before, it is a layout tool, so it doesn't touch your content of your pages. It is source order independent, so that means you can create as many experiences as you want without actually modifying or touching your main content. Enables spanning, alignment, layering, all these capabilities you kind of would expect from a grid. It is in an IE10 platform preview we have implemented, as I mentioned before, under the -ms prefix. And the best part of it, of course, it is available for you today to learn and experiment and provide us feedback so we can get it into the full build as quickly as possible. The next thing I want to talk about is CSS3 Flexbox. And I'm really amazed how the web influences my garden center. So I kind of like found this at my local Home Depot, and it's really amazing. Hopefully, the CSS3 Flexbox tool is as useful than this garden tool for my wife at home. So coming back to the little cookbook. So we talked about the managing device families. Then we looked at the real estate. Okay, now we have these regions which we declared with FR units, which are fluid in nature, which get all the space. But how do we manage the content inside it? And as we saw before, with floaters, it's kind of a brittle tool, because as soon as that space gets too small, items get moved around, layout starts breaking. Well, Flexbox is a great tool to help you manage that space within your grid. It allows you to distribute that space across the items inside it, makes things larger, smaller. And secondly, it provides you a great way to control stacking of your items. So if you worked with WPF or Silverlight before, stack panel comes to mind. It's a very similar concept which is now available on the web. And you can now build experiences like that. So give you an example how it is used. Here I have my content. It's just a certain set of 5 divs. I start off very similar to grid by declaring a display box. And then I can apply a couple properties to identify what stacking I want to do, in which direction, and what I want to do with the content based on the available space I have available to me. So in this case, I'm starting stacking my content horizontally, so my divs, which were normally are vertically, now are laid out horizontally. It is aligned in the middle, and it has a justify property on it, which takes all the available space and equally distributes it between these elements. I mean, this looks all really great, but let's take a little bit more look at a real-world example. Let's assume I want to build like a media player. Like a media player menu on my application. So I have a back, play, and a forward button. And if I just put the buttons in my web page, it will just look like that, independent of how much space, how fluid the application is. So with Flexbox, I can now set a flex unit on my buttons, and now all that available space gets distributed to my buttons. So they always take the space they have available. So I don't get like awkward experiences where I just have empty space flying around within my control. I cannot just distribute the space, but I also control the alignment. Because most of the time, I just want to center the content of my little menu control. And Flexbox gives me that capability too, with the display, with the box pack property. So I can just with a simple property, now I center my content. I can also change the orientation. Let's assume I want to create a mobile experience of my little media player. And on mobile, I want to stack, obviously, everything vertically. But if I run even out of further space, I can also reorder the controls with the ordinal group. So what happened here is I moved the play order to the top of my stack. Because on a small device, that's most likely where my start-stop button is, and so it has a much higher value. And again, no JavaScript necessary, just with a couple CSS properties, I can do that. So let's give you a demo. Makes this a little bigger so you can see it better. So what you see here, I'm using a Flexbox to center my content. Because who of you had to kind of build centering experiences on the web before? Like auto margins, does it ring? It's very difficult. It's not straightforward to do. And with Flexbox, you actually have some very good means to independent of your screen size. Things now finally get always centered. And you can use it even for your page design. So if you have your main content area and you always want to have it nicely centered, this is a tool to use for it. How do I achieve that? By my Flexbox. I set my MS box. Let me just move this to the side here so you can still see it. I'm calling my stacking orientation again horizontal. Align my content in the middle, so it's now nicely aligned here. I use box pack to align it horizontally and vertical. And that's the experience you get. So now let me take off this for a second. So now I have just pretty much removed the centering code, so it's now just aligned normally to the left where you would expect. And now I'm using the flex property. And I'm using Scott Heiselman's trick of kind of preparing code and magically coming out of nowhere into my application. So what I've done here is now I'm taking the available space. One proportion goes to the first element on my screen, and three parts of the available space go to the third button on my little screen here. And as you expect, that's how space gets distributed, and even independent of my width, that the proportions get maintained. It goes back to what I said at the beginning, is now you can start thinking proportion, you can start laying things out in proportions rather than in fixed pixel units. And it will always work independent of your screen size, which is pretty nice. So, okay, that was pretty exciting. So the next thing I wanted to show you is the power of multiple. So multiple gives you a wrapping capability in Flexbox. And this is very useful. Let me just save this. So for example, if I'm now running out of space, it now starts pushing items underneath it. And as you can see, the items are still nicely aligned. So with a couple lines of CSS, you can now start building list views or list view experiences. And I'll show you in the demo later how to use those concepts. And of course, I can combine everything again with media queries. And now if my space runs out, I'm switching completely the layout, and I'm still using just CSS to move things around with the help of Flexbox. And of course, you can combine Flexbox with Grid. So grid, you provide your outer layer, and then inside, you use Flexbox to deal with the manipulable space and start stacking your content inside it and manipulate it inside it. Again, with a simple box and vertical and multiple properties. So what are the benefits of Flexbox? They give you control over stacking in a single dimensions, either vertically or horizontally. It works hand-in-hand with grid. It is an adaptive in nature through the Flexbox property. You can control how the elements get ordered and aligned. And Flexbox also supports the multi-line capability, which gives you this nice wrapping behavior. The spec is still in flux because there's still some capabilities missing in Flexbox. But the good news is most modern implementations now agree on a base set of behavior, which you can now start, adapt, and use in this concept, which is very good. And again, it's available to you in Platform Preview 10 to learn, experience, and provide us feedback. So the last pick I want to talk about is CSS3 Multicol. So you might ask, why is CSS3 Multicolumn important for fluid and adaptive pages or experience we want to build? Well, it's another tool for you to use to actually deal with large amounts of text in a more readable and user-friendly manner. Because grid and Flexbox, they're great for horizontal space, but you might end up with very, very long lines of text if you just dump your text right in there. And research suggests that the best reading experience is if you have between 8 and 12 words on a single line. And most of us who work on the web, that's exactly naturally what we do, because we will build page experiences like this, where we have a lot of unused white space, and no offense to the advertisers, but from an end user perspective, I'm mostly interested in this content in the middle, the article I want to read. And the experience I have today, I have to do a lot of scrolling to actually read my article. And that is because I only have this fixed block available because I want to keep my content within 8 to 12 words, and all the other space is unused. Well, if I would dump the same content in a fully fluid web page, well, it would look like this, which obviously is not the best reading experience either. Much nicer would be a reading experience like this, which now you can produce with CSS3 multicolumn. So multicolumn, in short, allows you to manage the space into columns. And if you remember in the keynote today, you saw the Twitter application, which was another way how you can now distribute space in columns and just put content into there. So multicolumn is not just for text. It's actually for any type of other dynamic content you want to use. It enables you to control, and the best property I can recommend you is it's called the columns property, because that is the adaptable property, and column width property. And then they also have a columns property where you can say, I always want X amount of columns on my screen. Not quite as adaptive as the column width property. And it gives you some basic styling capabilities for these getters. This spec is already a candidate recommendation. It's super stable. Go use it today because it's not going to change much anymore. And for that reason, we actually have implemented in IE this without the experimental -ms- prefix. So let's walk you through some examples. So here I have some images and some flat text, and I actually want to lay it out a little more nicer. So I'm using the columns width property to define my columns at 300 pixels. And the beauty of this is now it starts laying out in 300 pixels, as you would expect. But if you have more space available, it simply generates more columns. And that's exactly that adaptive nature you want to have. And let me give you an example. That's this one here. This makes this a little bigger so you can see it. And you set up multi-columns just with a single property. So in this case, it's just called column width 200 pixels, and that generates your multi-column behavior for a certain content. In this case, it's just a div with a lot of text in it. And it generates this experience. So I have like two columns here in a portrait mode. And if I go into landscape, well, I get nicely more columns. And if I have more space, well, it gets me more columns. And if I run out of space, I have a horizontal scroll bar so I can still get to the content. So that was column width. The next property it provides is called columns. So if I set columns on 3, it will just generate 3 columns independent of how much space I have available. So if this goes wider, well, my column goes wider. And the last thing I wanted to show here is the capability of style it. So you can define like style rules between the columns, and you can give it like make the gutter wider and start styling that. And give me an example here. So as you can see, it's now 3 columns. If it gets smaller, it stays 3 columns. Obviously, at a certain point, the reading experience is not the greatest anymore. But if you, again, if you define ranges with media queries, again, it's a good tool because you can kind of know within what proportions you're operating in. The other nice side effect I want to mention here is the style rules. Because with Internet Explorer, we actually can use border styles to manipulate these things. So you can give it like dotted or things, anything you kind of like envision from, or you can apply to borders today, which is an enhancement over what most of the other browsers currently support. And of course, it works great in conjunction with grid. So if you have a flexible area within the grid, the next thing, you put your multi-column inside it, and all your text now nicely gets formatted. So it's a very neat tool. And you can do it with the column width property. So the benefits of multi-columns, it allows you to control your line lengths in fluid scenarios. It works hand-in-hand with grid and flexbox. Of course, you can put a multi-column also within the side of flexbox, which could live inside of a grid. And just because I haven't mentioned it before, and of course, you can also nest grids. So you can create many grids within grids if that's what your layout needs to keep control over it. It's adaptive by nature through the column width property. And the spec is very, very stable. So use it today. It's a great way to create really richer experiences than what we see on the web today. And again, play with it in the platform preview 10. So now, putting all these concepts, media queries, grid, multi-column, flexbox together in a demo called Griddle. And I want to shoot out some thanks to Dan Cederholm from Dribbble.com, who kind of made this all possible by inventing Dribbble and what Dribbble is. Let me show you. So Dribbble is pretty much Twitter for designers. So designers can upload their latest Photoshop comps, share it with their designer community, and they can rate them, like how much they like it, and give them feedback on stuff like that. It's a very nice little tool, and they have beautiful graphs. I wish I could create some of these experiences. So what I have here is a menu, which kind of says these are the most popular Dribbble uploads. This kind of shows like the latest uploads. This shows the newest guys who just signed up and with their latest uploads. And then I have a little about section, which, of course, nicely multi-column forward tells you what Dribbble is all about. But that alone is not the exciting part. The exciting part is that I have one application which can work for my landscape, portrait, and mobile view all at once. And it has, I can't say zero lines of JavaScript, because I did some JavaScript and some jQuery templating to actually bind to the Dribbble content, so I called their public API to make that happen. But I'm not using any JavaScript for my layout or screen manipulations. It's all done through CSS. So what you notice, the first thing you notice is if screen real estate disappears, items disappear. So it's fully adaptive to the size of my screen. And if I now get small enough that I get into my portrait view, you notice that my layout, that my little debut section, which kind of shows me the most recent uploads, now kind of move to the bottom of it. And now from a vertical scrolling experience, now I have a horizontal scrolling experience. Okay, which is kind of nice. And now if I go further in, I'm now in my mobile view. It's all done with a single application, all achieved through a single application. And what I have left here is pretty much just the most recent upload and the collection of the latest uploads here. So that is pretty nice. So, sure. Good, very good, very good, very good question. So the question is pretty much, if my menu items get smaller and smaller and smaller, at what point do I shift to a different paradigm, and how can I even do that, right? If that kind of characterizes that. Great lead-in to the next thing I wanted to show you. So bring me up my little F12 developer tools here. Can I snap this to the side? So looking at the menu, as you notice, When I start shrinking, first my menu still stays nicely centered on a line. I achieve that through Flexbox. And if I get even smaller, I'm starting bringing up this concept of ellipses, which is another nice fluid tool available to you to where you can say, hey, even though I'm running out of space, I still make it visible to my end user that content is here. The other question here is, can I now also completely change the paradigm? Yes, you can, because based on your screen size, you can now adjust, for example, apply different font sizes to it because it's just a styling paradigm. So with the help of media query, you can just say, hey, if I'm within that width, now make the font from 12-point to 8-point, right? And you size it smaller. And you still keep the nice centering and all this other stuff going. Yes, you can do that. You could do that potentially as well. Because honestly, this is just a region here, right? So if you look at the debut section as a region and notice when I went into portrait and I switched this stuff around, you can do exactly the same with the menu. Instead of having a horizontal menu, you could think of now a jump list on the left side. You're just moving it around with CSS. So let me take a look how we got to achieve this. So first of all, I kind of like embedded everything in this nice little Flexbox. So I have my display box here. And I'm assigning, again, the middle property, the horizontal. So I'm stacking horizontally and the justify. So it's always nicely centered in the middle. And then, as I mentioned before, there's this nice, cool little property called text overflow ellipses, which gives you this nice little dotted behavior. Since you might hear from my accent, I'm German in background, I love this feature because words always tend to be so wonderfully long. So the next thing I wanted to show you is the behavior we actually have here in the middle. Like when I resize and you see the content fly in and fly out. So it actually, let me see, provides a very nice stacking behavior. And that was the multiple capability of Flexbox I showed you previously. Because what I've now created is pretty much a Lisp view experience by stacking stuff horizontally but giving it wrapping behavior. So it runs out of space, it just goes underneath, but it's still nicely aligned. So it gives you this great Lisp view type experience, and it still keeps nicely stacking in the right order you expect. And I achieve this by... Sure, I get the right box. Here we are. Here, by the little multiple property I have set here at the bottom, here at the bottom as part of my flex box. So that's kind of cool. So. Now I want to show you something which I personally think is even cooler. How did I do these wonderful experiences? I'll move this to the right, move this to the left, and I'm just grabbing like this fellow here, this box here. So what I have here is actually a flex item in which I'm embedding a grid inside of it. So I have a background color first, which is yellow. Then I'm overlaying an image through the layering concept. And then I'm overlaying a grid on top of that. And that is this little guy here. So this is another grid. And I have this cool little property, which is called align. So now I can make this start. And as you can see, now it just moved the top. So it gives me perfect positioning capabilities within my grid cells. And it's just like I just created like a one grid cell, and now I'm start positioning inside of it. And I can even do stuff like this. Like, so I can just provide like a center overlay, if that's what I desire. Like, can you imagine you had to write the JavaScript for all these list items? It would be crazy. So this is really, really great stuff. And talking about centering capabilities, now if I click on this, it gives me a little preview of the artwork. And when I resize my app, it always stays nicely centered. This is also a very common experience you want to create when you have like little pop-up effects and you kind of want to get some user inputs. And Flexbox now gives you the capability always perfectly centered without to do weird margin adjustments and stuff like that. So very, very nice. So the last thing I just want to point out was the multi-column. Here I'm using the column with property. So as I get more space, you can see more columns pop into view. And at a certain point, I'm reaching like my portrait view, and then it stops at a single column. So it fully nicely adapts. So what I showed you here was the power of CSS media queries, grid, flexbox, multi-column, all in a single application. And as I mentioned before, the only lines of JavaScript I had to write was my templating logic. Everything done purely declaratively through CSS within my application. So that is very powerful, because now you don't have to write different experiences, you don't have to manage them, you can just all build it in a single application, you're done. Hopefully, since it's the power of the standards, the same markups, the same as Dean talked to you before in the keynote, now this will run on Android, i7, Windows 7 phone, Windows 7, any of these capabilities with a single application. So it's very powerful. Okay, and thanks again to Dan Cederholm to invent Dribbble. I think it's a very nice little idea. So I also showed you the cookbook in action, because now you have the capabilities to manage the device families, manage real estate, and have flexible, scalable control, manage content inside there. Again, you just need to be aware of what is your largest fixed content inside your application. And the smaller you can make that, the more fluid and adaptable your application will be. Of course, I have to do a little call of action at the end. I highly recommend you download the platform preview of IE10 on our test drive site. Give it a run. Try all the features. Try out CSS Grid. Try out Flexbox. Try out multi-column. See how you like it. And give us and the CSS working group your feedback. As I mentioned before, Grid and Flexbox are still developing. So now is the right time to make your feedback heard. Say what you like, what you don't like about it. So we can ensure that what you need is actually getting implemented across all the browsers. And with that, I'm opening up for questions. Any questions? Go ahead. So the question is, when do we see CSS3 grid in Chrome and Firefox? And I should go back to the Twitter slide where it was asked, like, hey, it probably takes a lifetime to get into those browsers. The other browser vendors are also very interested in these specs because they obviously also see the need in that regard. And we're working closely with them to make sure we have an interoperable web. What I heard from the Chrome representative on the working group is he's currently working on the Flexbox spec, and the next thing he wanted to look at was the grid spec. I don't know how that translates into how much they're interested in implementation, but I have good hopes. And that's also a good set of feedback you can provide to the other browser vendors so this comes faster, because it's a tool we really desperately need. Great question. So the question is, how does it fit in with the proposed CSS regions specification? So CSS3 regions, it's a very interesting spec done by Adobe, which allows you to get kind of, I want to call it like magazine-type experiences. So it defines regions where you can flow text in it. So you can create very rich magazine type experience. I hope I say that correctly. So it actually works hand in hand with CSS regions. So we actually have built it with that type of capability in mind. Because with grid, again, you define your regions. Within regions, now you can define slots. That's what the CSS region spec defines. And within slots, you can now redirect text flow. So you can have a cell which sits at 1-1, and you can have a cell which sits at 2-2, and just say, flow text from here to there. Don't go over here and then continue here. So they work hand in hand. Yes. So that is the current Flexbox implementation is what all current browsers have implemented. So it's to give you a stable base ground. So the spec still evolves and continues to evolve. So at some point of time, I assume, either we kind of like freeze the current behavior and make it available, because now every browser has it, so it's already de facto standard, so to speak, and then provide like a level 2 on top of it, where you can say all these additional capabilities live on top of this. Might be one option how we deal with that, or are we just taking that spec moving forward? The working group hasn't decided yet. Any other question? Here.
On the column layout, it shows that the scroll bar is a horizontal scroll bar.
Yes.
Which makes sense if I have three columns that one of them is moving over. Is there an option to make that a vertical scroll bar and kind of move, you know, you have to kind of move all three columns out?
No.
The reason I wanted that was because when it came to one column,
yep.
As far as
I'm aware of, and I might be wrong, but as far as I'm aware of, there's no capability to do that, because the whole reading experience is, it always goes in the direction of your reading experience. So, I mean, multi-column works also with left to right to left, all the different language combinations you can have, but your reading order always determines in which direction the scroll bar will go. So if you have some Asian language, then you might actually get vertical scroll bar, but that's not because of multi-column, that's because of the reading direction you want to have in that language. Yes?
What's the fallback storage, for example? If I sweep you at right and Flexbox, my customer is open to IE9, what are the strategies? Do I need to use JavaScript to try to mimic that functionality?
That's a very good question. So the question is, like, what is my fallback story like to IE9, IE8, IE7? And that's something where we're currently thinking about it. Our first goal was kind of like work with the other browser and work with the standards to actually first get that settled. So now the next step for us is to start thinking, how can we provide a good fallback story for these new standards? JavaScript would be one option. Having different property mechanisms would be another option. So we're still discussing that right now. But we definitely want to, by the time we ship, we want to provide some capabilities there. Oh, excuse me.
What's a realistic date where this stable
Oh. If you look at CSS, so the question is like, by what is a realistic date when all these specs become like universally implemented by all browsers out there? If it would be like 10 years ago, I would tell you 10 years, because that's how long it took for CSS 2.1 to land. But CSS 2.1, of course, was a much more ambitious, much bigger piece of work to work through. The working group recognized that problem and now started to create modules, which are much smaller in scope and therefore much easier to implement by the standard by the browser vendors. Flexbox, for example, I think got introduced 2 years, 3 years ago. And now pretty much all the major browser vendors have a stable implementation out there. It doesn't mean that the spec is ratified yet, but at least it's something you can start using. So as Dean pointed out in the keynote this morning, is there's much more rapid innovation in that space right now. I mean, I needed a crystal ball to tell you, but I would expect that it goes much faster than it used to be. Any other question? Great. So thank you so much for coming, and enjoy gambling.